Hey, hello, my lovely listeners, my lovely podcast friends, my lovely movement towards peace and a better world. And peace is so important, especially now the North Korean guys announced that the feared leader Kim Il-sung, or Kim, whatever his name is, has a new kid. So that definitely means that I have to say sorry, because he is capable of producing kids. So Kim, sorry, but you're still a lunatic. So having that said, then I would say welcome. And yes, we all know that they tested a hydrogen bomb. And I heard it yesterday and I was just thinking, oh gosh, they have a hydrogen bomb. They have 150,000 mortier grenades ready to make Seoul into the hell on earth. They have it all. They can just do it. They have to buy it. And from that side, at least, I mean, well, let me be clear, I will have in the short future, I will have a great guest on it about North Korea. But it's insane what's happening there, and I do think that it's time for peace in the world. So, in this show, I'm gonna explain the silence. I have to announce that the Crypto Profits Report is out. So, in case you like innovation, in case you like money, in case you like all those great things, yes, it's out there, you can get in it. I have to announce that it's some failed calls with me and the issues with the city of Eindhoven. I got a great interview with you, for you at least, with Reinhard. Here is a foreign correspondent, and it's interesting to see how foreign correspondents are looking at the Trump administration, because definitely, you all know, I'm a reasonable to good break supporter of the Trump. And we're gonna have in the Trump moment, we're gonna drain the swamp. Yeah, well, let's also have to get it out. Let me begin and continue about North Korea. I mean, it's insane. They tested a hydrogen bomb, and I'm just wondering, there are not so many countries that have the ability to have a hydrogen bomb. But hey, if North Korea has one, Iran has one, and that freaks me out more than North Korea. I mean, the military regime in North Korea, they're hardliners, they're crazy people, but not that crazy. They want to stay alive. They want to keep the regime in place. I mean, and what you see happening now is that there are a lot of problems. I mean, I believe that 1/3 of the global oil supply is going around that area. So it would mean for the energy world a big buffers. It would mean for the world a big fuss. The only question I'm just wondering about, how can we get this out and get to de-escalate this? Is it not a better move to simply start with peace talks? And that both China and the US figure it out. I know it's tough. I know it's hard to happen. And whatever you think of Trump, you cannot say that he is really diplomatic. But I'm pretty sure he can be. But it's just, I'm thinking, what's the future? Let me know what you think. You can send me a tweet. You can simply tweet me on at Lodewijk Hof. Well, on the silence, I will be clear. After the great retirement party, the shows were going down. And I had some technical issues. The interviews I did, some were not recorded, like this one with Reinhard. We had to do it again. So thank Reinhard, a really big thank you for it. And it's just that I thought it was better to sort out the issues first and then get back and see it out. Also, I had a lot of backlogs in work and reports. I mean, I need to get a Brexit report. I need to get to make you a millionaire, the tax-free passport, all those lovely things. Need to get it out. Need to update all the internet marketing e-courses, so we're gonna have a great time in it. So if you like to get your cryptocurrency profits, I strongly suggest you go to hofprofit.com/cryptoprofits, because it's the best thing for you to do and get it out. And as I said, I want to have 500 followers of the podcast before the holiday season, at the end of the holiday season in the Netherlands. Unfortunately, I missed that goal, so I'm now talking with Christian-minded radio network and a New York radio station. And soon I will start talking with some sponsors about getting the podcast on air. So definitely we go on air and off air. So traditional radio and innovative radio. So that's going to be great, I think, happening out. And then I was something that I had to talk to you about. If you remember my podcast about healthy travel, I had it about all the issues with the city of Eindhoven. And last week we had a barbecue. Yeah, we have quite some sardines left, so have a lovely barbecue. And yes, when the sardines are gone, we go to the lobsters, the prawns, the duck, the chicken. Oh yeah, it's gonna be one barbecue season for a full year round. Almost would stay in the Netherlands for it. But I was doing the barbecue. I mean, that's man's work. I mean, if you have the smell of sardines, the smell of the coal, the fire. It's just, I know that you don't need to have fire in the bunker, but just such a lovely thing. Have a great radio station with highly popular music on, and just relax, a glass of red wine. Beer was on, I had no more beer, so had to go to the wine. Just lovely. And the neighbor, Arthur Spitz, was having a chat with someone, I don't have a clue who it is. And he and the sons basically said to that person that we have a leakage. That's really interesting to know, because there's no signal. And to be honest, I don't really feel like asking him, just listen to the Healthy Travel Show and you explain why. Or you will know why. And he said that they informed the city of Eindhoven of it, and that they're going to try to buy the home for a really low price to renovate it. Now the interesting part is that he says this, and I'm just thinking, I published what he did before in my in a podcast, so he did not respond to it, so he's fine with it, he agrees to it. He says that he has done this, he says basically that all those low level things are the things he is doing, and that's insane, it's a pity. I mean, I'm just wondering then, if he's freaking out on us so much, why is he not simply taking care of his kids more? Why is he not acting, because his older son frequently yells Allahu Akbar? And yes, the mayor of Venice is right. Shoot, then ask questions. He has problems buying the books of his younger, of one of his daughters for school. I don't have a clue which daughter it is. Yeah, it's just a pity, and I would simply say get that out. I mean, it's a shame. But okay, that's him, and that's the way he thinks about it, and if that's the way he likes it, then that's not fine by me. But that's it. So on that side, I decided, now I have proof of everything that I expected, to slowly start publishing about all the things happened in Dutch. In English, I will talk at the same time in a podcast about it. And the reason is easy. You can start a lot of legal cases, which I did, but you end up in a bureaucratic mess, which basically makes me remember of the trial from Franz Kafka, which is basically what's happening now. And I can tell you now already that the legal issues with the city of Eindhoven takes 10 to 15 years, everything. And then at the end, no one really knows what it's about, with the exception of me and a few people who have the complete file. But the mayor is definitely gone, the aldermen are gone, and so it's insane. It's just a pity, and I would simply say, why are they not more friendly? And why can we not? Why couldn't they? But it's more for me also, they have to be more friendly, they make a lot of errors, and they always try to cover up their errors, and with all those publications, they are not capable of covering it up. So that's just something. And so I'm also starting about the bureaucratic mess, some talks with organizations, and that's all gonna be great and going on. So slowly on, we will get there, I think. Reinout, because it's time to move on to the interview. Reinout is foreign correspondent for a Dutch radio news station. He is also host of the podcast Double Dutch, which I will link to in the podcast show note page. So simply go to hofproffer.com/podcast and get it out and just listen to it. It's a Dutch podcast, and there are two foreign correspondents. Both are politically anti-Trump, and they talk about America. And the interesting part is that they do recognize what's going wrong. They do recognize the errors in the campaign. They disagree with Trump. But to give you an example, I think that explains best. A listener sent an email with the question, after the Macron victory, does America not really need something like that? Someone who's out of the establishment, out of the picked order, out of the families who are running America. And they basically said, well, that's Trump. They got it. Because predicted was Jeb Bush from the Republicans, Hillary Clinton from the Democrats. Well, and no matter what you think about Trump, he is not a Democrat, he is not really a Republican, he's in between, and well, it's interesting to see what's happening, and they recognize the facts. And what you see with a lot of people, they don't recognize facts. And if you could bring people who recognize facts, see what's happening, and get all those people in, then you get a great, lot better show. So I interviewed him twice, because the first time some things went wrong, and it's basically a great show. It's a nice, well-informed guest, and I would say listen to it. Let me know what you think. You can leave a comment below, and here we go. Lang leve China.
Yeah.
Okay, Reinoud, very warm welcome to the show. Would you?
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Would you introduce yourself for us, for the listeners?
Yes. So my name is Reinoud van Wachtendonk, and I am the American correspondent for BNR News Radio. That's a started out as a business news radio station, is now a general news radio station. It's the commercial competitor of the Dutch public news radio situation.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to earn our own money with commercials and stuff. Our competitors, they have more listeners, but they also have a lot more money. But that is because the Dutch taxpayer pays for that news, and we earn our own keep.
So just a great private enterprise example, and taking on the government on that side.
Yes. Yeah, that is true. Mm-hmm. Having lived in the United States, I guess that's also important to know. I have lived in the United States for more than 35 years. I left the Netherlands when I was 21 years old. I had worked for the Dutch right-wing newspaper, The Telegraaf, in Amsterdam for 2 years. But I always wanted to move to New York City. And so when I was 21, I thought I was ready for that, which of course is absolute total nonsense, but I'm still here. And I did make it to New York, but now I live actually in the Berkshires, mm-hmm. in the western part of the state of Massachusetts, which is a couple of hours drive away from New York City and a couple of hours drive away from Boston.
So in between of Boston and New York, you're now living?
Not necessarily in between, but it's a triangle. So if you draw a triangle from those two cities, you end up in the Berkshires.
Okay, one question out of interest, because I'm talking with a radio station to get this podcast in a 1 hour radio format over there.
Uh-huh.
Can a person be ready for New York?
Yes, of course. I mean, New York, when I moved there, as I said, more than 35 years ago, New York was and in a way is the greatest city in the world. To establish yourself, you know, it's everything that you know, all the cliches about New York. It's the great melting pot. You have every opportunity that you can get. It's exciting. It's, you know, culturally speaking, so cutting edge. That was certainly the case when I moved there, and I think it's still the case. Even though, if you compare, for instance, the way that Times Square looked and felt the way when I moved there in the 80s, you compare it to today. You know, today Times Square is Disney World, Disneyland. But and 35 in the 80s, it really was not. It was very gritty and close to dangerous, but exciting. But yet, having said that, New York is still a great city to live in, to move to. So I would say to anybody with some initiative who wants to do something special, go to New York for a while and live there.
Okay. It's especially interesting because this is also the reason I asked you for this interview, is that you are president, you are an American passport holder.
Yes.
It's from New York. So Trump became president of the United States against all the odds. How is it possible? Read all wrong, or?
Well, that is. I'm still trying to figure that out. How that is possible? And I have a pretty strong I hold a very strong antipathy towards Donald Trump. But I want to make clear that it is not now because of his politics of the last 2 years. As I said, I moved to New York in the 80s. I started writing some articles. I came across Donald Trump in the 80s, and I found him an extremely distasteful human being then, and I still find him an extremely distasteful human being now. But I just want to make clear that has not much to do with Republican politics or his politics now. It's just because 30 years ago I already saw that, to my taste, to my impression, that was a guy that really was representing something that I find extremely wrong, to be honest, in a human being. And now he's president. And so the next question is, and I tell you, you asked me that, how is it possible that he became president?
Yeah.
And maybe you want to ask me more questions about it. But I think the quick answer is that there are so many people in the United States who really feel that they don't play a part in the United States. And that has built up a lot of resentment. You know, there's America's supposed to be a classless society. know, the myths about you can be a shoeshine boy or a newspaper delivery boy, and then the next thing you know, you're a millionaire, or in these days, a billionaire. It's true, it happens, but there's very much in the United States as well a class society, and the people who are not in the privileged classes, who don't go to the right schools, who don't get treated maybe in the right way by the media, they have built up an enormous amount of resentment towards the, you know, let's call them the elite class. And that, I think, has built up and built up and built up, and that is one of the reasons that Donald Trump he worked tirelessly on that resentment, and he said, you know, Barack Obama, he's part of that elite. Hillary Clinton, she is part of that elite. The Democratic Party, they say that they are for the unions, they say that they are for ethnic minorities, but they are actually part of that media elite, and that worked. You know, don't forget that his election victory was an extremely thin election victory. We don't have to go into that, and we don't have to explain that, and it doesn't matter because he won and he is the president. But I believe that that class resentment is a really important thing to understand, to realize why Trump, with all that distasteful baggage that I think he brought with him over the last 30, 40 years, managed still to become president.
And what do you think that the Trump presidency, at least for the remaining 2.5, and maybe even 6 to 7 years?
Yeah.
How will it go? Because
how will it go?
Never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment, and I do believe that the United States under Donald Trump is really quickly losing its leadership status and its moral leadership status. That it had. I really do believe that in the last 7 months under Donald Trump, European countries, to some extent perhaps Asian countries, I think the Middle East, that looks a little different because you see the news stories. Well, both Israel and some of the Arab nations do look at the tough guy Donald Trump and recognize that perhaps, and so they seem to be a little less worried. I don't know. I'm really not a foreign affairs specialist, but I do know, and as you know, that the Dutch government and a large majority of the Dutch people really do not understand Donald Trump and really look at the United States and ask. You come from a more right-wing perspective than I do, but a lot of people in the Netherlands ask, has America lost its mind? And I would say, yeah, by electing Donald Trump as president, that is, you can make a case for that, yes.
Is it not very dangerously, at least what you just said, that at least the Dutch politicians and likely 99.9% of all the politicians and all the bureaucrats and all the civil service employees, they don't understand Donald Trump, and this is not very dangerously, as that he holds one of the biggest nuclear arms sites, and he can basically say, well, we're going to kill the complete world.
Yeah, I would say that is dangerous, because I do what I just said about the politics of resentment and you know, a surprisingly large number of Americans carry a it's maybe a little too simple, but carry that around and made Donald Trump the resentment president, and he himself has an enormous chip on his shoulders. He has many chips on his shoulders. He seems to govern from resentment as well. You know, if you are that rich and if you are that successful as you claim to be, how come you look at the world and feel that everything that people say to you is a slight, and you have to get even for those slights? So with that personality trait, with that characteristic, I think it is extremely dangerous. Yeah, that a guy like that, who might be governing from resentment, from anger at the world that doesn't recognize his greatness. Yeah, I do think it's there's a risk there that he will do something out of spite that might bring the world to some very dangerous places.
It's on topic that a lot of people are not talking about are the third parties in the United States. Did they play a role in the Trump victory?
only to the extent that I believe that the Tea Party, the populist right wing of the Republican Party, if you look at that and think that that is a third party, and I think that it might become clearer and clearer that that will be a third party, then I do think that a third party has become strong in the United States. We don't have time for it, but I think that you can write a very nice feature article and make the case that Donald Trump is already a third-party president in the United States. Yes, he was elected as a Republican, but you know as well as the listeners know, and I know that he is fighting with the Republican establishment, such as it is, and he does that on with the support of that Tea Party wing. And those people don't particularly feel Republican any longer either. So there are no viable third parties yet. But I'm going to say Donald Trump, in a way, is a third party president.
Okay. And final question: if Trump is a third party president, or is going to leave the Republican Party, which I sincerely think he will do, who's going to take over, and who will take over the Hillary Clinton hole and the Democratic Party?
That's a really interesting question, because the Democratic Party, of course, has no voice right now, does not seem to really have a message, an opposition message to as an alternative for the voice of Donald Trump, or that third party Tea Party Republican anger and resentment voice in the United States. So the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party is on some level also somewhat away from the mainstream of the Democratic Party. So we don't see it very much now, because all our attention is just focused on Donald Trump and on the Tea Party people in the Republican Party. But that same sort of struggle, I'm not going to equate it, but that same sort of struggle is also happening in the Democratic Party. And did you ask me for names?
Well, names are always handy. And then let's assume that Trump will move over the Tea Party and the Bernie Sanders guys will leave the Democratic Party. So yeah. Who's going to head them? The Tea Party will be headed by Donald Trump. Who else? But for the rest?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really have names for you on the Democratic side. The obvious leaders are very, very old people, and basically cannot hold this much longer, just mm-hmm. because of their physical age. Bernie Sanders would be 79 years old if he decided to run again and would get elected. Well, he won't get elected. I know that, but he would be 79 years old in 2020. So that's ridiculous. Joe Biden would be 77, I believe. And I don't really at this point see any really young and exciting Democrats on that side coming up. But in the American system, people become suddenly viable presidential candidates out of nothing. And
we
saw that exactly. Yeah, that is exactly right. On that side, a prime example, but that's 4 years ago or however long ago, was Jimmy Carter. Nobody knew anything about Jimmy Carter. He was the governor of Georgia, but nobody knew anything about him. And suddenly, because he discovered the power of the Iowa caucuses, suddenly he became the Democratic candidate and he became president. But that was just out of the blue for most people. So I don't really know who the Democrats have as a standard bearer that can come in, but in 2020 I'm sure they're going to have a viable candidate. And there's one name that comes up, and she is somewhat similar in her trajectory as Barack Obama was. Mm-hmm. She is now the senator of California. Kamala Harris is her name. She is of Jamaican and Asian Indian ancestry. She used to be the attorney general of the state of California. She is very much into the social justice agenda of the Democratic Party. And so she has become a senator. And people are saying, Barack Obama was a senator for 2 years or 4 years when he became president. So she can do the same thing. The only problem is, I just saw an opinion poll where they asked people if they were familiar with names, political names. And 63% of Americans had never heard of Kamala Harris. So that is a problem right now. But you know, keep an eye on her. I think she is. She might become the face of, at some point, the new Democratic Party.
Okay, and if Trump leaves the Republicans, who's going to take over at the Republicans? Is it going to be Senator Ted Cruz, who has definitely a more outspoken and even weird, especially in European perspective, worldview, yeah, or who else?
Yeah, I think that Ted Cruz is a viable candidate to become a standard bearer for the Republican Party. I lived in Texas, in Austin, for 3 years, and I lived there when he became senator. So I covered some of his election campaign. And I would say one problem with Ted Cruz is that, and this is no exaggeration, nobody likes him. some of his voters like him, but everybody who actually comes in contact with him, even his Republican colleagues, they all despise Ted Cruz. So the fact that he was the last man standing, right, fighting, yes, Donald Trump in the primaries, so he must be an extremely shrewd and smart politician, because he gets people to vote for him. But if your personality is such that you basically repel everybody that you have to work with, that is a bit of a problem. Okay. But I think you're right. He is a strong contender. He is from that very conservative right wing of the party, and I'm going to say, you know, Mike Pence, of course, the vice president, certainly thinks of himself and is in the American system a very viable second person to follow Donald Trump. And I worry, but I'm saying this from a left-wing perspective, a left-wing liberal perspective, I worry that people like Ted Cruz or Mike Pence, they come in with, you know, more or less the same agenda as Donald Trump, but they have a certain amount of competence. So if you're a right-winger, you really want a Ted Cruz or a Mike Pence or another former governor or senator with a certain amount of government experience, because if you have competence and that agenda, you might actually achieve something.
Okay.
Donald Trump has an agenda, but as far as I can see, no competence whatsoever. And as a left-winger, I say thank God for that.
As a final question, then I will let you go, because definitely you need to give some American news to your listeners and VNR.
Yes.
In Europe, the people spoke about Ted Cruz as the moderate and reasonable Republican candidate. What was going wrong with your colleagues? Because no offense of Ted Cruz, but he is not moderate. He is on the, well, I think, religious nuthill side of,
yes,
politics.
Yes, he is. Okay, I'm glad you say that. He is a religious nutcase.
And his father, although is
No, you're absolutely. If people in Europe think that Ted Cruz is a more reasonable and moderate alternative for Donald Trump,
I will send you emails of the publications that they said around the fight for the Republican nomination. I will send you the links to the press articles.
Anybody who comes out of Texas politics cannot be, nationally speaking and internationally speaking, a moderate to begin with, because Texas, the Texas Republican Party is a really bizarre cauldron of religious fervency that we in Europe have absolutely no other examples for. I mean, there are these tiny Dutch right-wing Christian, we call them black stockings parties. Mm-hmm. They are probably way too liberal for people like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee from Utah, people like that. No, there is not an ounce of moderation in these people. And apparently you and I share that. That's interesting. I find religion and right-wing evangelical religion tinges to politics. Well, I can't understand it, because I'm not a religious person, but I find it also really dangerous to believe, as Ted Cruz does, that God has the final word and everything that happens in this world is because of God. So one final thought of me. Look at the senatorial election campaign in the state of Alabama.
Yes.
You know that Jeff Sessions has to be succeeded, and there's an election going on there, and the guy who's probably going to win it and is going to be in the United States Senate, mm-hmm, and is going to be even crazier religiously speaking than Ted Cruz is Roy Moore.
Is he still in?
Yeah, he's still in, and he's actually going to probably win. He's probably going to win. He won the primaries and just a few weeks ago, and he's a guy who believes in that the Ten Commandments are what have to rule human beings, that God has the final word, and he knows what that word is, of course, that what God's word is. So Roy Moore is going to be a senator for Alabama in the U.S. Senate. And then my Dutch colleagues that you were talking about can write about the moderate Roy Moore, but he is completely out there in, you know, religious nutcase land, and I find him scary.
Okay, I would say thanks for the interview, and it was an honor to have you as a guest.
Well, thank you very much, Lodewijk.
Okay, thanks. Reinoud, ik zie jou die...
I don't know what you think about it, but I sincerely think it was a great interview. It was a nice thing to do and a really well-informed guest. But what do you think about it? And what do you think about the news that I'm not the big Ted Cruz supporter that some people expect me to be as a conservative libertarian? I would say give me a note, let me send me a tweet. You can tweet me at Lodewijkhoff or simply leave a comment below on the podcast page. And you recognize the tune, it's the moment it's for you to have a quick consideration about what President Donald J. Trump, the 45th President of the United States, is doing. The embodiment of the anti-establishment movement, the embodiment of what a lot of people consider what's wrong in the world. And but I just think that's great in the world, because what's wrong with Trump as president? It's the guy who made lots of promises, slowly keeping them, getting them, and he inherited the problem from North Korea, from Bush Senior, Billie Clinton, Barack Obama, and he has them. And I thought it's time to have a look at how Donald J. Trump is drawn into the swamp by the politicians and the people who ruined one of the best countries in the world. And I say one of them because there are more great countries in the world. And it's easy to see what's happening at the moment. You see, in the White House administration, a lot of generals and military staff who worked really well under Bill Clinton, worked really well under Obama, worked really well under Bush. You basically see all the generals, all the soldiers, all the guys responsible for the problems that he don't like. And then you can have a complete trade embargo with everyone who's doing business with North Korea, but it's not gonna work. What I consider a pity, what he should have done, is get new thinkers out. Get people out who are great inspirational thinkers with new views, and get simply boots off the ground in Afghanistan. But sadly, that's not what happened. The American military presence is basically more of the same, and that also means there are great investment opportunities. But that's something else. I mean, would you not say that it's going to be a great idea when there are no more kids being blown into 1,000 pieces, when we will get simply peace to the world, where every country would mind its damn own business, when North Korea would not launch rockets or test hydrogen bombs, when peace would hit the Middle East, when the assholes of Islamic State would be defeated and being terminated out of society? Would it not be something really good? And ask yourself this, with all those generals now in the White House, how could Trump possibly do it? I mean, you see all those people who are doing the same thing over and over again. It's a sad but historical fact. Since the Second World War, the United States of America has basically lost every war. Every military operation overseas was a disaster. It did not go well, so... And ask yourself now this very easy question. Why would it change? Because North Korea has a hydrogen bomb? Because the Taliban has made Afghanistan into a Soviet Union communistic funeral center and a Western funeral center? No. It's not gonna get different. We get more of, say, more beautiful young people are gonna be disabled for the rest of their life. They're gonna miss a hand or simply a leg is blown off. You will see more attacks that you could literally get scrap the brains from the roof of a building. And it's the same, because I would simply say that one of the great things of Trump was that he had a promise, and for a lot of people also the hope that Obama brought in, at least for his supporters, that there would be something different. And what he's doing on the military side is just the same of everything. It's just the same non-working, incompetent, badly managed operations that we had before. And that's a shame. That should not happen. It's time for to get something out there that works. To do things that make sense. I mean, the United States of America is technical bankrupt after the terrible things in Texas with the hurricanes and the water problems in Houston, the chemical explosions, the debt ceiling is gonna be hit even more, and we're gonna talk in a debt ceiling with the guest pretty soon. And I'm just thinking, why can he not get all the generals out and bring in new people with new visions, new ideas, just from outside? I mean, just imagine. It's all those great people with different views are going to run the military. Because one thing is sure, he has to make the choice. Does he gonna get a shoot, gonna shoot or not? That's the only choice, is the only person who can make that choice is Donald Trump. He is the only one. He can decide what to do. But do you really think that more soldiers in Afghanistan would work? It did not work for over 50 years. The Taliban is fighting a war with the West longer than Adolf Hitler did, and it looks now that they are just winning. So they are doing that the Germans could not do, winning a war. And the Germans could not do it twice, and the Taliban, well, actually won two wars against the Soviet Union and against the Western coalition. So is that really what you want? Is that draining the swamp or getting stuck into the swamp? And that's the Donald J. Trump moment for today. And that brings us also to the end of the show. And it's a show of almost 37 minutes. So, oh dear, a long show for you to listen to, but a lot to learn from. I would say, what do you like about it? What do you not like about it? Leave a comment below. And I will also have a few household things for you. I have a few guests lined up. Tomorrow I will talk about blockchain. We have e-commerce, business planning. So have a look at it. I would say, sincerely, I look forward to hearing speaking to you tomorrow. And I will say, until your time, cheers, mates, and howdy, howdy.